Adam Smith here on KVI with John Carlson. Adam, how are you?
I'm doing well, John. How are you?
Well, I am assuming, since you are on the Armed Services Committee, and North Korea is always a concern, that you will want a debriefing from Dennis Rodman on where we go with the government in Pyongyang.
I might leave that specific task to somebody else in the government, but I'll tell you, it would be a fascinating conversation, I suppose. I suppose Dennis Rodman at this point has about as much insight into Kim Jong-un as anybody in the United States, for sure.
Well, no, that's what they're saying. He has more.
He hung out with the guy.
Did you see him on This Week with George Stephanopoulos?
I didn't, know.
Okay, well, first of all, he shows up wearing a coat that is festooned with dollar bills, American currency. Like that guy who does the late night TV commercial on how to get money from the government.
Yeah.
He's wearing a Ralph Lauren baseball cap. He's wearing aviator sunglasses and numerous nose and lip piercings. And he's sitting down talking about the human rights record of North Korea. Stephanopoulos going back and forth.
I mean, it is a strange world.
Yeah, no, it just, the world has officially gone mad. But anyway,
yep.
Putting that all aside, let us talk about domestic stuff here for a while. I want to play a short clip from Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick. He was on Meet the Press a week ago, and it's only a 10-second clip. Do you have it there, Phil? And he was making the case for the balanced approach of having both spending reductions and, of course, getting rid of some of the tax loopholes.
And the president has shown that a balanced approach, which is about cuts and closing loopholes, that enables us to invest in the things that grow jobs, is more important and appropriate for us.
Boom. Right then and there, a couple of things that explain to me why this balanced approach isn't balanced at all. Number one, the assumption that a stronger economy requires a bigger government. Number two, that the purpose in getting the loopholes closed is not to close the deficit. It's to just generate more money for more, quote, investments. And here we go again.
Yeah, well, the thing is, John, I agree with Deval Patrick. We have cut taxes by roughly $7 trillion in the last 15 years. We are in a massive deficit situation. The deficit is well over $1 trillion, as you well know. So if we're going to get back to fiscal responsibility and back to balance, and if you say no tax increases, you know, we're running a deficit of about, I don't know, close to 40% of the budget. Do you want to cut Medicare and Medicaid and unemployment insurance and on down the line by 40%? Do you?
Well, you know we're going to have to deal with entitlement sooner or later, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And okay. I'm happy to cut them. I don't want to cut them by 40% because I know the devastating impact that that would have on those programs that are important. And if you're not prepared to stand up and say, I want to cut spending, I want to cut these programs by 40%, then you better be prepared to say that you're willing to bring in some more revenue. And I am willing, because I don't want to stand up and say that. What I find fascinating about conservatives is, you know, they don't want to say that they want to cut Medicare by 40% or any of these other programs. In fact, on the sequester, you know, they keep saying cut government, cut government, cut government, and they say, okay, well, the sequester is causing problems. Oh, that's Obama's fault.
Oh, it is Obama's fault. It's completely his fault.
I know that, but I know.
Shall I tell you why? The federal budget.
I know the argument, but the point I'm trying to make, John, is if you want these type of deep cuts, then all conservatives, all Republicans, should be celebrating the sequester, and they should be standing up and pounding on the table and saying, cut Medicare, cut Medicaid, cut educate, cut it by 40%. That's the number that you need to cut it by if you say no.
If you want to balance the budget tomorrow. Right now, most people would be thrilled if we could just start lowering the growth of spending. And that's all this is. I mean, here we have these announced cuts in sequestration, which now the White House seems to be backing off on. But we have had a budget that has doubled in the last dozen years. Doubled in the last dozen years. And we're told you can't cut 2.5% from that without eliminating meat inspectors and keeping the Truman Report.
John, I don't know where you get 2.5% for FY13. The cuts that are going to have to come to those programs, and I know this, Department of Defense is going to take the bulk of this, are 10%. And furthermore, they're 10% in the last 7 months of the fiscal year. So, but the point here is, without revenue, without some revenue to help us over the course of the next 10 years, the cuts that you would have to take to programs that the American people have said they don't want to cut at all, by the way, if you look at the polls, the specific programs, they'd be too devastating, they'd be too great. That's why you argue for revenue.
Well, the problem, though, is that when more revenue lands on the table, it dissolves the incentive to control spending because, hey, there's more revenue on the table.
Yeah, well, I disagree with you. I mean, we're $1 trillion in debt. We just went through the sequester. You know, as you guys have famously pointed out, Democrats cut Medicare by $700 billion a little while ago. I mean, look, we are so far in debt.
Well, that was just for Obamacare.
We're so far in debt and we're so far in deficit that a little bit more revenue in no way reduces the incentive to cut spending. We got too big a hole to dig out of.
Well, but it does. I mean, you just heard, that's why I played that clip from Deval Patrick. He talks about getting rid of loopholes so we can generate more money to make investments. In other words, so we can grow the government.
No. Well, look, if you're talking about...
Why do you want to grow the government?
John, if you're talking about trying to get back to balance with a $1 trillion deficit, if you're saying you're going to bring in revenue instead of doing cuts, all you're saying is that you will then have to cut less in terms of the spending programs. And yes, I think we do need transportation infrastructure. I think we do need, you know, some money left around for Medicare and Medicaid. And the numbers are just so great that absent revenue, you are looking at substantial cuts that, frankly, if the Republicans put those specific cuts on the table, I don't think they'd have the support of the American public. And I could be wrong about that.
Well, you now have the wealthy paying their largest share in 30 years. So how much
share of what? In what sense in 30 years? That's simply not possible. And well, if you factor in a lot of the growth in their income, if you're talking about as an overall amount based on GDP, I suppose that's true. But in terms of percentage of their income, no way that's true. With all of the rate cuts, because even with sending the rates back over $450,000 to what they used to be, you're still talking about a ton of marginal rate cuts and everything else that's been in place for 15 years.
Okay, the wealthiest 1% earn about 18% of the nation's income. They pay 39% of the nation's income tax bill.
Right, and they always have paid a much.
No, they haven't. That's my point. When the rates were higher on the wealthy, they paid a lower share of the tax bill. So what do you want? Do you want the higher rates or do you want the revenue?
That's simply not the way it works, John.
Okay, I tell you what. No, I do know it is the way. In 1980, the wealthiest 1% had a 70% marginal rate. They paid 17% of the nation's tax bill.
Look, just because the whole middle class and the folks down below have seen their income and everything else go down in the last 30 years, so therefore they're not paying as much taxes, is hardly a reason to celebrate.
No, I'm not. What I'm pointing out is that as margin, you can raise rates on the wealthy, and the portion,
John,
the portion of the tax bill they pay will go down. It just happened in Great Britain.
John, first of all, you remember our earlier conversations. I'm not just talking about raising taxes on a tiny little bit of 1% of people out there. I mean, look, 82% of the Bush tax cuts went to people making less than $250,000 a year. Now, we can talk about loopholes. We can talk about all this other stuff. All I'm saying is that if you want to get back to a fiscally responsible position, if you say no tax increases for anybody, we're not raising one more penny in taxes anywhere, the size of the cuts that you are going to have to make in important programs is simply greater than I think this country's going to want. That's my point. You talk about who you should raise taxes on, we can have that discussion. But if it's just spending cuts, that's a huge cut to programs.
Well, there's three ways to grow. There's three ways to generate revenue. The first is by reducing spending. The second is by raising taxes. And the third is by growing the economy so more revenue is generated.
Sure, and you have to do all three. I don't disagree with that.
Well, but what if raising taxes retards economic growth?
But it doesn't. That's what we heard back when Bill Clinton raised taxes in 1993, that this was going to devastate the economy. Two examples. 1993, Bill Clinton raised taxes. The Democrats raised taxes. Got tossed that off. This is going to devastate the economy. We can't possibly have growth. It won't. He had the fastest growing economy that we've had since.
Whoa. The fastest growing
economy. In 2001.
Well, let's take the 90s. Let's take each period of time, one at a time. Number one. The 94 midterms, he loses Congress, so we have a conservative Congress, we have balanced budgets, we cut the capital gains tax, grew.
That's simply untrue.
95, 96, 97, 98, 99.
In 90 and 93, we raised taxes by an enormous amount, okay? And the economy already, as you well know, ironically, when George H.W. Bush lost his election, the economy was already turning around at that point. It just hadn't been felt yet, and so he didn't get the benefit of it. But to say that the tax increases in 90 and 93 had nothing to do with an economy that happened 2-3 years later, it's just any economist would laugh you out of the room. And then in 2001, we say we're going to cut taxes. We cut taxes dramatically in 2001, 2002, 2003. And we had the worst economy that we've had since World War II. Now, John, I will admit to you that there's 1,000 other factors that go into this. I know that. But the notion that raising taxes by definition leads to a bad economy and cutting them leads to a good one is simply disproven by the last 20 years.
Well, except it hasn't. Because first of all, I agree with you on this point. Temporary tax cuts do no good. Just as the Cash for Clunkers program did no good. Because when it's temporary, people just change their timing. Permanent cuts in taxes like capital gains have generated more revenue. When the rates were cut in 78, more revenue. When the rates were cut by Clinton, more revenue. Plus greater economic activity. I don't have a lot of capital gains, but I know arithmetic.
Why don't we just zero out the tax rate and then we'll have the most revenue we've ever had?
No, because the law of diminishing returns can go too far.
Right.
That's what I'm pointing.
And we've got a capital gains rate that's we've lowered them as low as they've been. And again, John, then what I want to hear on your program for the next couple of weeks is aggressive advocacy of massive cuts to these other government programs. It's going to have to happen to get a balanced budget in 10 years.
I want to hear that position staked out. What you'll hear from me are systematic cuts, entitlement reform, tax reform to grow the economy. You got to do all three at once. If you raise taxes, it'll simply retard any incentive to control spending. It happened with Reagan. Reagan makes a deal in 82. Yes, I'll raise taxes in exchange for $3 of spending cuts for every dollar of tax increase. He makes the deal with Tip O'Neill.
And the deficit absolutely exploded.
Because the spending cuts never happened. And it happened with Bush. Same thing. Taxes were raised in exchange for promises from George Mitchell. Yes, we'll bring down spending.
Well, look,
and it didn't happen.
If it's in this situation, we raise taxes and don't cut spending at all, then yeah, that's a problem. But we're already in the process of cutting spending. I can't wait to see that process. It's happening. Incorporation happens.
All right. I'll give you the last word on that, Adam. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Okay?
Thank you.
That's Adam Smith, Congressman from the 9th District here on Talk Radio 570 KVI.
We're out of road to kick the can down. We've got a long-term spending problem that has to be addressed.